Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 45.
Okay, so the scene kicks off. It's the middle of the night. Three Pure Ones temple, that's the Doyo, and the Taoists living there get woken up suddenly.
And they find, from their point of view, it's a disaster. All the offerings they carefully laid out.
Yeah.
Gone, eaten.
Exactly. And the text gives this really crucial detail about how they were eaten. It says, Sin View of 10-4.
Ah.
So things with skin had the skin peeled off. Things with pits had the pits spat out. Now just think about that for a second.
Right. I mean, that doesn't sound like some, you know, ethereal deity just absorbing the essence. That sounds like someone actually sat there and ate, like physically peeled the fruit, spat out the pits. Very human.
Precisely. It strongly suggests a living being, someone with, let's say, human-like eating habits, was responsible. Not really a divine spirit. But here's where it gets interesting. The leaders of the temple, these three immortals, they're called Tiger, Deer, and Goat, they start discussing it.
Okay, so do they maybe consider the obvious, like, you know, wrongdoers, thieves?
Well, they do, for a split second. But they immediately just dismiss that idea.
Wait, why? Why dismiss the most logical explanation, especially with the evidence? Peeled skins, spat out pits, that screams person, not God.
This is really key. It's where their own beliefs, and maybe, frankly, their own ambitions, kind of override the physical evidence right in front of them. They quickly convince themselves this must be the three Pure Ones' grandfathers, the Phaeus Alice.
The Pleiades.
The very top. They figure the gods themselves must have descended because the Taoists were just so sincere, you know, their constant prayers, the hu-shu-wuj. But crucially, they also tie it to the favor they have with the king, the Gundro, and their success in pushing Taoism in the kingdom, even suppressing Buddhism, the Dunjo.
Okay. So it's not just pure, simple faith. It's kind of tangled up with their own sense of importance, their status, especially their connection to the king. They're seeing the evidence through a lens that validates them.
Spot on. It's almost a textbook case of motivated reasoning, isn't it? Seeing what you desperately want to see. They believe their actions, their status, their, you know, merit has literally brought the gods down. How else could this happen? It couldn't possibly be just some guys breaking in that would kind of lessen the temple's magic and their own standing.
Right. Diminishes the brand, so to speak. And once they've sold themselves on this divine visit idea, they don't waste any time, do they? They see a chance here.
Oh, absolutely not. They immediately think, wow, the gods are actually here. Before they leave, the text says, we've got to ask for something. And their goal, to request sacred water and golden elixir.
Okay, sacred water, golden elixir. Sounds pretty standard divine request. But the reason they want it is interesting. It ties right back to the king, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
Their primary stated goal is to give these amazing things to the king to guarantee him long life, eternal youth.
And why do that for the king?
Well, the text is explicit. It's to demonstrate their own new you, their merit, their achievement to the king. It's all about cementing their position, their influence at court.
So this whole thing, which started with someone just, you know, eating their snacks, immediately morphs into a political play, using supposed divine favor as leverage for earthly gain.
That's exactly what the story seems to be highlighting here, how easily earthly power and religious belief can get mixed up. And they take it super seriously. They get ready for a big ritual, put on the proper robes, the who get out a jade tablet, start chanting the Yellow Court classic. 9 yards.
Totally. The Tiger Immortal leads this specific prayer, and he really lays it on thick a war. Emphasizes their sincerity, how they've promoted Taoism, gotten rid of monks, how much the king loves them, and then asks for the water and elixir so the king can live forever.
Meanwhile, behind the curtain, so to speak, the actual culprits are watching this whole performance unfold.
Indeed. You've got Sun Wukong, Zubaji, and Shaoseng, and yeah, they're the ones who actually ate all the food.
And Pigsy, Zubaji, he starts getting a bit nervous hearing all this intense praying directed right at them. Right. He really does. He kind of whispers to Monkey, worried, you know, this is our fault. We ate the stuff, didn't leave, and now they're praying like this. How are we supposed to answer? It's such a classic Pigsy reaction, instantly realizing they're in trouble because of what they did.
Yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to think. But Monkey, he probably sees it differently.
Oh, completely unfazed. Sun Wukong isn't feeling guilty. He's seeing an opportunity for, well, more chaos, more fun. He decides, okay, let's lean into this.
So what does he do? Does he just confess?
No way. He speaks up, but he puts on this, like, booming divine voice, claims he just popped over from the, you know, the legendary Celestial Peach Blossom Festival.
Wow.
And he brushes off their immediate request, says something like, oh, didn't bring any elixir or sacred water today, maybe next time. It's brilliant, really. Keeps the illusion going, makes him sound important and busy, like a real deity on a schedule.
Okay, hearing that must have just sent the Taoist over the moon. They probably went nuts.
Totally nuts. They're absolutely convinced now. A living celestial venerable has actually come down to see them. And this excitement just makes them bolder. They get even more insistent with their prayers.
And does the request change now?
It kind of broadens, yeah. Now they're specifically begging for a method for eternal life. Not just for the king anymore, but explicitly for themselves too.
Oh, there it is.
The dear immortal offers up another prayer, hammering home all their points again, devotion, getting rid of monks, the king's favor, but this time asking for sacred water to extend their own lives.
So the pretense of just doing it for the king kind of slips a little. It becomes about pure self-interest. They want immortality for themselves. Even Xia Seng picks up on how intense they're getting.
He does. Even quiet Xia Seng feels the pressure. He says to Monkey, oh, like, brother, they really want this bad. They're praying again. He's clearly a bit uncomfortable with where this is heading.
And Monkey, seeing just how desperate they are, decides, okay, fine, you want something, I'll give you something. But in his own special way.
Exactly. He tells Pigsy and Xia Seng, which is basically, I've got an idea and you guys are going to help me out. You just know something incredibly mischievous is about to happen.
What's the plan? What does he tell the Taoists?
He instructs them to bring jars, basins, whatever they have, and then to leave the main hall. They need to shut the doors and windows tight to prevent revealing heavenly secrets.
Right. Yeah, that's the excuse. But the real reason, obviously, is so the Taoists can't see what the three of them are actually doing inside.
And the Taoists, just blinded by their hope for immortality and divine favor, they just go along with it.
Eagerly. They scramble to find containers. The text mentions a large jar, a sand basin, a flower vase. They put them right there in front of the altar, and then they obediently go outside and kneel down, just waiting, full of anticipation.
Sure.
Oh, this is going to be bad. So inside the closed hall, the big reveal of Monkey's sacred water plan happens.
Yeah.
And it's pungent.
That's one word for it. Sun Wukong goes first. The text is incredibly blunt. Hu Qiuo. He urinated a whole flower vase full of stinking urine. It's just so crude, right? The absolute contrast between the Taoists' sky-high spiritual hopes and this very, very earthly reality.
And Pigsy, what's his reaction?
Pigsy finds it absolutely hysterical. He bursts out laughing and then, well, he joins right in. He fills up the sand basin. The description is wild.
Like a whole river rushing down a slope, just filling the basin. He even apparently makes a joke to Monkey about it.
Oh my gosh, even Xia Seng, the usually quiet, dutiful one.
Even Xia Seng, he contributes too, adding to the big jar. Oh, he also urinated about half a jar's worth. So they've all made their contribution. They sit back down on the pedestals, pretending to be statues again.
And then they announce the gift is ready. Yep. They call out in their best departing deity voice, to you, Vandal! Little immortals, come get your sacred water.
So the Taoists burst back in, all excited, thinking they're about to drink the nectar of the gods. And instead, they get this terrible, smelly surprise.
They rush back in, bowing, thanking the gods, totally overcome. They gather up the jar, the basin, the vase, and naturally, they can't wait to try it.
The taste test. This is where it all unravels.
It does not go well. An old Taoist tries it first. He makes a face, clearly, and says it's, not very tasty, kind of pungent or acrid. He's maybe trying to be polite, still clinging to the belief.
But the next taster is a bit more direct.
Yeah, the goat immortal takes a sip and he's less ambiguous. He says it smells a bit like, well, pig's piss. And at that point, you know, the penny drops. The horrible, disgusting truth starts dawning on all of them.
And Monkey, who's obviously been listening, knows the game is up.
He does. He realizes they're figuring it out. So he decides it's time for the grand reveal. Make it as dramatic, as humiliating as possible. He wants them to know exactly who tricked them.
So he shouts down at them.
Yep. Just destroys their whole fantasy. First, he mocks their initial idea. Basically, which three pure ones would ever bother coming down to this dump? Just cuts right through their core belief.
Ouch. And then he tells them who they really are.
Exactly. The full, brutal truth. I'll tell you our real names. We're the Tang Monk's disciples, heading west on imperial orders. He connects himself directly to the Tang Monk, the very mission they've been working against.
That adds another layer of insult. And then the final, disgusting punchline.
He delivers it with relish. That's not sacred water. What you drank was all my piss. Just incredibly blunt, incredibly vulgar. It completely shatters their self-made narrative of divine favor and reveals the crude reality.
Wow. The whiplash from praying for immortality from gods to realizing you drank monkey pee. That's quite a fall. What's the immediate reaction from the Taoists?
Fury. Just absolute sheer rage. Humiliated beyond words. They immediately block the temple door and just start attacking the disciples with anything they can grab. Pitchforks, brooms, broken tiles, rocks. They're just throwing things wildly. Treat in this blind fit of anger.
Just a complete breakdown. Lashing out.
Totally. Imagine going from thinking you're practically divine liaisons to this.
Yeah.
Being utterly duped and frankly defiled by these guys, the disciples of the very monks they despise. The humiliation is immense.
But monkey being monkey doesn't stick around for the fallout.
Not a chance. Quick as a flash, he grabs his companion, swoops up Shaosang with one arm, Pigsy with the other, smashes right through the temple door, and zooms off with them on auspicious light. They fly straight back to their own monastery, the Smiter.
And they managed all of that, the feast, the impersonation, the fluid dynamics, the escape, without even waking up their master Tang Senzai.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
He seems to have slept right through the whole bizarre urine-fueled divine hoax.
Next morning, they get ready to leave.
The monks arrive at the palace.
And it's super early, right? Like 3 a.m, heading to the Five Phoenix Tower.
Correct. They need to get their travel pass, the Guan Wen, stamped, official business.
But there's this immediate feeling of, well, danger. They know the kingdom's policy.
Yeah, prosper Taoism, destroy Buddhism. Doesn't get much clearer than that.
So naturally, the disciples are worried. They're telling Tripitaka, hey, maybe the king won't even sign this thing.
Uh-huh, because he actively dislikes monks.
And bingo. That fear plays out instantly. The official announces them.
And the king's reaction. Pure hostility.
Yeah.
Like, why are these monks looking to die? Basically, why aren't they locked up?
That tells you the baseline attitude here. It's bad.
But here's a crucial turn. The Grand Tutor steps in.
Okay.
He's not necessarily pro-monk, but he's pragmatic. He points out, look, these guys came from Great Tang. That's a massive distance.
10,000 miles, the text says.
Exactly. Through who knows what dangers. So he reasons they must have some kind of power, some abilities.
Interesting angle.
His advice is basically, let's just validate the document. Keep good relations with Tang, you know? Don't rock the boat unnecessarily.
This is purely political calculation, not kindness.
Pretty much. But it works. It convinces the king to actually summon them instead of, well, worse. That intervention is key.
All right, so they get called in. They present the Guan Wen. The king starts to look at it.
And boom. Dramatic entrance number 2. The 3 national teachers arrive.
And the reaction is totally different, right?
Oh, completely. The official announces them, and the king just freaks out, drops the document, jumps off the throne.
Rushing around, getting special seats ready, bowing really low.
While all the other court officials are practically hiding their faces, they don't dare look up.
And the teachers...
They just stroll in, arrogant, walk right past the bowing king, don't bow back.
Yeah. Okay, that tells you who has the real power.
Absolutely. The king even asks them, like, I didn't summon you. Why are you here? It shows how little control he has over them.
They don't even answer that, do they? They just immediately ask about the monks.
Straight to business. Their business.
Yeah.
Which leads right into the accusations.
Yeah, they unload on the monks, claiming all this stuff happened just yesterday or last night.
And it's a serious list. Killing 2 of their disciples.
Releasing 500 Buddhist monks the kingdom had imprisoned.
Smashing up carriages. Breaking into their temple at night.
Destroying sacred statues, the 3 pure ones. That's a huge deal in Taoism.
Massive insult. And stealing offerings meant for the emperor.
But the final one, that's the kinker, isn't it? The most personal one.
Oh, yeah. They claim the monks tricked them. Left urine pretending it was some sacred dew or something.
And they drank it.
Each took a sip before realizing. The sheer humiliation there. You can feel the rage behind that accusation.
No wonder they want revenge. The king hears all this, and he's ready to order their deaths right then and there.
But Wukong isn't having it. He steps right up.
Doesn't hesitate.
Nope. Clasps his hands, speaks up loudly, demands proof. Who saw any of this?
And his defense tactic is brilliant, kind of dark humor mixed in.
Totally. For the murders, he's like, okay, fine, we admit it. Take two of us as payment, let the other two go. He's mocking them.
Highlighting how ridiculous it is to just accept the charge without proof.
Exactly. Same for the carriages and prisoners. No witnesses. Okay, maybe one monk takes the fall.
But the temple incident, the theft, the urine.
Oh, he draws a hard line there. That's a frame up.
Yeah.
He calls it out directly.
And he uses logic. Says, look, we're strangers here. We don't even know the streets. How could we find your temple at night?
Good point.
And if that whole urine thing happened, why didn't you catch us then and there? Why accuse us later?
Right. Plus, he adds, lots of people use fake names. Maybe it was someone else entirely.
He asks the king to actually think about it, investigate properly.
And the text explicitly says the king is inherently confused. Wukong's arguments throw him off balance. He's stuck.
Torn between Wukong making sense and these obviously powerful, angry teachers.
And right into that moment of indecision walks, a delegation of village elders.
Ah, the plot thickens with a real-world problem.
Desperate elders. They report a terrible drought. No rain all spring. Summer's looking disastrous. They're begging for rain.
Please save the people. A classic plea.
And the king may be seeing a way to resolve his own dilemma or just trying to look in charge.
He dismisses them confidently. Don't worry, rain's coming.
And then he explains why he backs Taoism. He tells everyone, my Buddhist monks, they tried before, failed, couldn't bring a drop.
But these national teachers, he says, they succeeded. They saved us.
That's his justification. Past results, or at least perceived results, dictated his policy.
Which gives him an idea for the current situation.
Exactly. A contest. He turns to the monks, basically, and says, all right, you think you're so capable, dare to challenge my national teachers to a rainmaking competition.
Yeah, and the stakes are incredibly high.
Life and death. Win, bring rain, you're pardoned, free to go. Lose, public execution, jiquete.
Just like that. Everything hinges on this magical duel.
And Wukong's response, facing execution.
He just laughs it off almost, says, yeah, sure, this little monk knows a little bit about praying.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Classic Wukong understatement. Perfect setup.
So the king orders the altar built. He's going to watch from the tower upstairs with the national teachers beside him.
While the monks wait down below.
Everything gets set up. An official announces it's ready and calls for the first contestant.
Specifically, the Tiger Power Great Immortal, one of the three teachers. He's invited to go first.
But as he's coming down from the tower,
Wukong steps in front of him, intercepts him.
But not to argue about who goes first, right? It's more strategic.
Oh, totally strategic. He brings up that proverb, the strong dragon doesn't crush the local snake, framing it like he's asking for basic courtesy as a visitor.
But really implying he's the dragon here.
Kinda, yeah. But his actual point is about clarity. He says, wait a minute, before anyone goes up there, we need to agree. If it rains while we're both praying, whose prayer worked?
He wants it clear beforehand. No confusion, no mixing up the credit later. He says, no shady business.
Let's hash it out now. In front of the king, fair and square.
The king actually finds this amusing, apparently. Notes Wukong has some logic. Up to.
Yeah, and Sha Sang, listening in, thinks to himself, oh, Wukong's got a whole belly full of tricks he hasn't even shown yet. He knows. He knows Wukong's playing a game.
Wukong's persistence works. Tiger Power Immortal agrees to lay out his method.
Okay, so he explains his plan. He uses a command board, 5 signals.
Right. First signal, wind. Second, clouds gather.
Third, thunder and lightning together. Fourth, rain starts falling.
And the fifth signal stops the rain, scatters the clouds. Very specific.
Very theatrical plan.
And Wukong's reaction to hearing this detailed, step-by-step, magical process.
Pure acting, he exclaims, marvelous. Amazing. I've never seen anything like it.
Like he's totally impressed, completely naive.
Yeah, playing the wide-eyed little monk while you know his mind is racing, analyzing every single step the immortal just revealed.
Absolutely brilliant. It sets the stage perfectly. We have the challenge, the rules, the astronomical stakes.
And this direct confrontation ready to happen, all revolving around something as vital as rain.
There's a platform over 9 meters high that's quite tall. And it's decked out with flags for the 28 constellations. Then on top, a table with incense, candles, a golden plaque.
Okay, specific names on the plaque too, right? Related to the thunder god.
Exactly. But then below that table, it gets even more detailed. 5 huge jars full of water with willow branches floating inside.
Willow branches.
Okay.
And iron plaques on those.
Yeah, iron plaques with symbols from the Thunder Affairs Office, like the actual Heavenly Department for Thunder. Plus, 5 posts naming specific Thunder envoys and Taoists standing by with iron hammers.
Wow. And there's stuff happening behind the platform, too.
Oh, yeah. Lots of other Taoists writing documents, a paper furnace burning things, effigies of gods. It really suggests this whole process is about sending formal requests upwards.
It's almost like cosmic administration, filing the right forms to get your magic approved.
That's a great way to put it. The detail is so specific, it's not just, poof, magic happens.
It gives it this unexpected structure, doesn't it? Like, magic follows rules. Procedures.
Precisely. It's not just raw power. It seems governed.
All right. So the stage is set. Enter the first challenger, Huli Daxian. He walks onto the platform, gets his charms and sword. What's his first move?
He recites a spell, burns one of those yellow paper charms on a candle flame. And down below, the other Taoists burn an effigy and a written document.
So that's the standard procedure for sending the request.
It seems like it. Then comes the signal. A ping sound as a command plaque is struck, and instantly, wind whips up in the sky.
Okay, immediate results.
Yeah.
How does Pigsy react?
Well, Pigsy panics a bit. He shouts, "Not good! This Taoist really has skill!" He's totally convinced by the wind appearing right on cue.
He buys it. But Wukong, he knows better.
Always. He tells Pigsy and Sandy to shut up and guard the master. Then he does his classic trick, pulls out a hair, blows on it.
Creates a fake Wukong.
Yep, a fake Wukong stands guard while his real spirit just zips out of his body and heads straight up into the air. He handles things behind the curtain.
So who does he find up there?
He confronts the Wind Mother and Lord Sun, the deities in charge of wind, and he doesn't waste time.
What does he say?
Basically, what are you doing helping this demon Taoist against me? I'm protecting the Tang Monk on Buddha's orders. He pulls rank, essentially.
And then the threat. Wukong usually has a threat.
Oh, absolutely. He tells them, stop the wind now. If even one hair on that Taoist beard moves because of the wind, he'll give each of them 20 solid whacks with his iron staff.
20. That's specific.
Girl.
And effective.
You bet. The Wind Mother immediately says, dare not, and poof, the wind just stops, completely gone.
Pigsy down below must be loving this.
Oh, yeah. He sees the wind stop right after the plaque was struck, and he starts yelling, hey, he asked it to retreat. Where's the wind? Come on down, let's have a go. Just totally mocking the Taoist.
Okay, so round one, effectively sabotaged by Wukong. What's the Taoist do next?
Well, he's clearly getting agitated now. But he tries again, burns another charm, another document, strikes the plaque again. Same ritual.
And does it work this time?
It does, initially. The sky fills up with clouds and fog. So the ritual is working. The message is getting through the heavenly system.
But Wukong's still up there, presumably.
Right there waiting. This time, he confronts the Cloud Boy and the Fog Lord.
And same result.
Same result. As soon as they realize it's Wukong intervening, they stop. The clouds vanish, the fog clears, and the sun shines brightly again.
Pigsy must be beside himself now.
Absolutely laughing his head off, yelling to the emperor and everyone watching that the Taoist is just faking it, no real skill. Look, the clouds disappeared.
The poor Taoist.
Yeah.
He must be getting pretty desperate.
He really is. The text says he loosens his hair, chants more spells, burns more charms, and strikes the plaque a third time. He's really trying to push his request through the system.
Okay, and this third time. This is where it gets really interesting, right? About the mechanism.
Exactly. Because this time, guess who shows up in the sky?
Oh.
Deng Tianjin, a heavenly general from the Southern Gate, leading the actual Thunder God and Lightning Mother.
Okay, the big guns. But why are they there? This is the key part.
It is. Deng Tianjin explains it directly to Wukong. He says the Taoist method, the Five Thunder method, it's legitimate. It's a real one, he calls it.
So the Taoist isn't just faking it?
Not at all. He sent a formal document, burned a petition, and it successfully reached the Jade Emperor himself.
Wow. So his ritual actually navigated the whole heavenly bureaucracy?
All the way to the top.
Yeah.
And Deng Tianjun confirms the Jade Emperor then issued a proper formal decree. It came from a specific celestial office. Think of it like the Celestial Bureau of Thunder Command.
A specific department.
Yep. And this decree ordered Deng Tianjun, the Thunder God, and the Lightning Mother to come down and provide the thunder and lightning for the Taoist's ritual.
So the Taoist magic is working because it's following heavenly procedure. It's like approved paperwork.
That's precisely it. It's not just chanting. It's filing a request that got approved up the chain of command.
Okay, so Wukong is now facing deities, acting on a direct, valid order from the Jade Emperor. What does he do? He can't just threaten them, can he?
Well, he sort of does, but more politely. He basically says, okay, I understand you have a decree, but hold off for now. Wait for me. Wait for old Sun to act.
And they actually listen, even with an imperial decree.
Incredibly, yes. They acknowledge the decree, but still stop everything. They defer to Wukong right there, right then.
That says so much about Wukong's unique position, doesn't it? His influence overrides even official orders.
It really does. He's got the status, maybe left over from his rebellious days, maybe from his current mission, that allows him to bend the rules, even the Jade Emperor's rules in practice.
Meanwhile, the Taoist on the platform is probably having a meltdown.
He's described as getting even more anxious, adding more incense, burning even more charms, chanting harder, and striking the plaque for the fourth and final time in his sequence.
Four times the charm. Who shows up now?
This time, it's the four dragon kings of the four seas. They arrive together. They're the ones who actually control the rain.
Ah, the Rainmakers themselves. And Wukong intercepts them too.
Of course. He addresses them directly, even reminds them of times they've helped him before, maybe not always successfully, he implies, and asks for their help today.
And there's that specific detail about Ao Shun, right?
Yeah, it's a nice touch showing Wukong's network. He thanks Ao Shun, the North Sea Dragon King, because Ao Shun's son had captured a monster for him earlier to help the Tang monk. Ao Shun confirms the monster's still locked up, basically asking Wukong, what do you want me to do with him?
And Wukong deals with this administrative task right in the middle of the contest.
Ha, yeah. He basically says, deal with the monster however you think best, but right now, focus. Help me win this rain contest. So the Taoist has finished his four strikes, his whole ritual sequence.
And Wukong has blocked him at every turn using his connections. Now it's Wukong's turn. But he doesn't do rituals like the Taoist, does he?
No, he tells all the assembled deities, the wind, cloud, thunder, lightning, and dragon gods, look, I don't do charms, petitions, plaques. You guys need to help me my way.
His way? How do they react to that?
Deng Tianjin, the thunder official, speaks up. He says, basically, of course, great sage, no one dares disobey you. But we still need some kind of signal. Otherwise, it'll be chaos, thunder crashing, rain pouring randomly. It won't look good for you.
Even rule breaking needs coordination. So no plaques, no charms. What's Wukong's signal?
It's brilliantly simple, especially after all the Taoist complex rituals. He just says he'll use his staff.
His staff, that's it.
That's it. The thunder god even gets a bit nervous, like, are you going to hit us with that thing? But Wukong assures them, no, just watch the staff.
Okay, so what are the signals?
He lays it out very clearly. Staff points up once. Signal for wind. And the wind gods immediately reply, got it, we'll release the wind.
Okay.
Staff points up twice. Clouds. Cloud and fog gods. Yes, sir. Spreading clouds.
Simple enough.
Staff points up three times. Thunder and lightning. Thunder god and lightning mother. We obey. We obey. Staff points up four times. Rain. The dragon kings. We obey. We obey. Staff points up five times means stop everything. Clear skies. Bring back the sun. And he tells them, don't delay on that last one either.
Wow.
It's the Tiger Strength Immortal, one of the king's favorite Taoists.
Does his ritual, and it's a total flop, a complete failure, not one drop of rain.
Right. After all that buildup, nothing. So he has to go back to the king. What's the excuse? How does he explain this?
Well, he blames the gods he supposedly commands. His excuse is that the dragon gods were not at home. That's the literal translation.
Not at home. Yeah. Seriously, that sounds incredibly convenient, doesn't it? After your big rain, magic fails. Does the king just buy that?
Well, before the king can even really react to that, pretty flimsy excuse, Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, steps up.
And he doesn't just step up. He makes a scene, right?
Oh, yeah. He loudly contradicts the immortal. Tells everyone. Tells the king, the dragon gods are home. The problem isn't them. It's that the immortal's magic is, well, useless.
Bold move. And then he doubles down.
He does. He offers for his master, the monk Tripitaka, to give it a shot instead.
Wow. Okay. So that really throws down the gauntlet. How does the king react?
It definitely ramps up the stakes. The king, probably desperate for rain and maybe a little intrigued, he agrees, gives the monks their chance.
But it's high pressure. And you even get Pigsy muttering something under his breath.
Yeah, Pigsy, always practical, maybe a bit fed up, sort of threatens that if rain still doesn't come, they'll just burn the place down, you know, set fire to the platform.
Ah, classic Pigsy. Arson as a backup plan. Okay, so Wukong gets Tripitaka onto the platform. Now, this is where it gets really interesting because Wukong's instructions are unexpected.
totally unexpected. He doesn't say, you know, perform this complex ritual. He tells Tripitaka, just sit here, be calm, recite scripture, specifically the Heart Sutra.
He calls it quiet meditation for prayer.
Exactly. And the officials watching are completely baffled. They're used to the Taoist way with all the, you know, the tokens, the talismans, the drumming.
They literally ask, where are the tokens? No talismans, no drums. They don't get it.
They don't. But Wukong just brushes them off, says none of that is needed. Because, well, while Tripitaka is sitting there looking all devout and peaceful,
Wukong is doing something else entirely, secretly, using his golden-bound cudgel, his magic staff.
Precisely.
Yeah.
This isn't quiet prayer from Wukong's side. It's a strategic play. He's using Tripitaka's presence as a kind of cover.
A smokescreen of piety.
Yeah, while he uses his actual power to command the elements directly, it sets up this amazing contrast between the immortals' showy but ultimately useless rituals and Wukong's, well, raw ability.
And his method is anything but quiet. First move, he points his staff.
Yep, points his staff and summons wind.
And the book makes it clear this isn't just a light breeze we're talking about.
Oh, no. It's described as this, like, devastating gale. It rips tiles off roofs, sends stones flying, breaks trees. It causes total chaos in the city.
Generals are startled. The palace ladies get their hair messed up. It's a real display of force.
Then another point of the staff, Pikmale, he brings mist and clouds.
And again, the effect is total. The text talks about cloud-pushing boys and mist-spreading youths showing up.
Right. And thick, dark smoke just covers everything, plunging the city into this deep darkness. It's described almost like primeval chaos. You can't see a thing.
Okay. Wind, clouds. Then comes the third point of the staff.
Thunder and lightning. And it's intense. The thunder god and lightning mother are described as being furious.
Huge claps of thunder. Flashing light. It sounds like the earth is splitting open. People are terrified, rushing to burn incense.
But there's that fascinating detail in there, isn't there? Wukong adds a little something extra.
Yeah, he calls out to maybe one of the thunder gods, calls him Old Dang, and gives him a specific order.
He tells him, hey, while you're at it, keep an eye out for corrupt officials and unfilial sons. Strike down a few extra of those as an example.
He's literally directing divine justice through a lightning storm.
And the text says the thunder gets even louder after that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It adds this whole layer of, like, social commentary or targeted punishment onto the weather control.
Okay, so after all this buildup, the crazy wind, the dark clouds, the targeted thunder, Wukong points his staff up one more time, and boo, the dragon gods arrive, and the rain starts.
And is it just a drizzle?
Not a chance. It's a downpour. Just as powerful as everything that came before it. It's like the Milky Way pouring down, flooding the streets.
The book uses comparisons like water pouring from a giant urn or a huge basin. Just immense force.
Yeah, it rains hard like that from morning until around noon or two.
At which point, the king's seen enough. He's worried about the crops flooding now. He calls out, enough rain.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the moment that really seals it. Wukong hears the king. Points his staff upwards again.
And instantly, everything just stops. The rain, the wind, the thunder, the clouds, all gone. The sun comes out, clear skies, just like that.
That precision control, that's the killer blow, isn't it? It's not just making rain, it's stopping it on command instantly.
Exactly. It shows everyone, especially the court, that his power is leagues beyond the immortals. They couldn't even start the rain, let alone stop it so perfectly. Their claimed rain would have just fizzled out eventually.
This is undeniable proof. It's a physical demonstration of real command versus, well, failed performance art.
Puts the immortals in a very, very awkward spot.
You'd think that would be the end of it. King's happy, monks get their travel permit. But no, the three Taoist immortals show up again.
Of course they do. And they object. Loudly. They try to steal the credit.
How? What's their argument this time?
They basically say, actually, that rain wasn't the monks doing it all. It was still our Taoist power working.
You're kidding. How do they even try to justify that?
It's a real stretch. They claim their earlier rituals did summon the dragons, but the dragons got delayed. Maybe traffic.
Huh. Delayed dragons.
Okay. Oh. So they argue the dragons just happened to arrive and start raining right when Tripitaka was sitting there. A complete coincidence.
They just stumbled into the opportunity.
Right. So therefore, they claim, from the root of it, it was still us who summoned the dragons that brought the rain.
Wow. That takes some nerve. How does the king take this?
Well, the text says he's confused again. He hears this and starts doubting. He's not sure who to believe.
But Wukong's not having any of it, right?
Not for a second. He dismisses their argument, calls their magic sideways path stuff that can't get real results, and then he proposes the ultimate test.
What's that?
He says, okay, fine. If the Dragon Kings were just here, they must still be nearby up in the air. Forget rituals. Let's see who can make the Dragon Kings physically appear right here, right now.
Ooh, a live demonstration. The king must love this idea.
He's totally thrilled. He says he's been emperor for 23 years and has never actually seen a live dragon. He declares whoever can make them appear wins, definitively.
So the pressure's back on the immortals. Can they do it?
Nope. They don't have that kind of power. Alma Mokilo. And let's be honest, even if they did, the Dragon Kings probably wouldn't show up for them, not with Wukong standing right there.
So Wukong steps up.
He looks up to this guy and just calls out to them by name. Ao Guang, where are you? Brothers, show your true forms. Come see me.
Just like that. No ritual, just a command.
Just a command. And just like the wind, the clouds, the rain, the response is immediate. The four Dragon Kings appear instantly.
All up here.
What do they look like? The text describes them, right?
Oh, yeah, beautifully. Flying, transforming, weaving through mist and clouds, majestic. Jade claws, bright silver scales, impressive horns. They fill the hall with this auspicious aura.
Seeing actual dragons, summoned on the spot by Wukong, that has to be it. Game over for the immortals. Absolutely. The king, the officials, everyone, it's just awestruck. They start worshiping. It's undeniable proof the immortals have nothing left to say.
Wukong then just tells the dragons and the other weather gods they can leave.
Yep. Politely dismisses them. Their job is done.